Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The Wake Up Call is also brought to you by The Hoof, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. What a beautiful day. I love this. It's nice outside. It's a comfortable weather. Lazarus was very upset when we didn't go for a walk before coming in here, but it's so nice. We'll do one when we get home. I know it's not that mean, is it? Not every dog has to have a walk before 1 in the afternoon. He got fed. All right, our guest today, probably already wondering, what in the heck am I talking about? Professor Timothy Wilson from the University of Virginia. He is the Cheryl J. Aston Professor at the UVA Department of Psychology. And in 2001, you received an All-University Outstanding Teaching Award. What's that all about?
Well, that's just, well, first of all, good morning, Rick, and good morning, everybody. And I feel the need to interject that I did take my dog, Jackson, for a walk this morning.
Don't share that too loud.
But, yeah, I was fortunate to be recognized with a teaching award a few years ago, which was very gratifying. I teach primarily the big social psychology course in the psychology department, about 350 students each year, which is a lot of fun.
And I guess if you make it fun, that's how you get the award. Is this award given by the university? Is it voted on by the students?
There's a committee that awards a few of these each year to professors who are nominated by students or faculty or their colleagues.
Well, congratulations, and I feel honored to have an all-university outstanding professor on the show today. Let me take a moment and thank everyone who's listening on 95.1 in Harrisonburg and our WNRN underwriters. Giving us support today.
L. Oppelman's Pawn Shop, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of jewelry, including estate jewelry and hand-picked GIA-certified diamonds, plus gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman also has cultured pearls and watches from brands like Rolex and Tag. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. All right, Professor. We're going to be talking about your book, a new book that you put out, I guess, at the end of last year called Redirect, The Surprising New Science of Psychological Change. And one of the notices that I read on it was called The Single Most Important Psychology Book Ever Written. And I thought, well, how do you not talk about that when the author professor is right here in Charlottesville? What I titled the show today was called Behavioral Changes. Is that suitable?
Yes, yes. I think that's a good one.
Because one of the things that I found in Redirect that caught my attention at first was that your book is filed under the self-help books. Because what your goal, at least as far as I read it, was that this is a way for people who are having problems being successful to discover ways to help them move from the negative to the positive?
Well, to be honest, Rick, we academic researchers cringe a little bit at the self-help designation. And it's particularly ironic because in my book I do go after the self-help industry a little bit for publishing books that give prescriptions about how people can change that isn't really backed up by science, and it may be right or it may be wrong, but we just don't know because it isn't tested. My book, I like to think at least, is very much science-based, based on research that social and clinical psychologists have performed over the last few decades that do give some tips about personal change, parenting advice, how to help teenagers, how to deal with some social problems like prejudice and stereotyping, lots of different kinds of behavioral problems.
And we'll be talking about those throughout the hour today. But you, the self-help book concern is about it being, I guess, discussed like that, but that's how it's filed. I went online looking, through the Jefferson Madison Regional Library, pulled up the book, and that's the Dewey number of which it's filed under.
Well, I'm hesitant to criticize librarians because my father was a librarian, but maybe we just don't have quite the right designation yet for what's an increasing genre of science-based psychology books that are really based on research. I'll talk to my father about that.
Good enough. All right, our guest today, Professor Tim Wilson, talking about his book, Redirect, Surprising New Science of Psychological Change. He is from the University of Virginia Department of Psychology. Well, if it's not a self-help book, then tell me a little bit about what the psychology of a self-help book is and why yours doesn't fall under that.
Well, it's really a book about research that does tell us about how to change, and I think it's of interest to policymakers, but also, in fairness, it is of interest to individuals. Each chapter ends with a section called Using It, which gives some tips to people in their everyday lives that as to how they might use this. So yeah, I'm maybe, maybe I shouldn't complain about the self-help thing too much because I do think the book has some advice to give.
Well, is the book written for a specific type of personality? I mean, who is the book written for? If you take out the academics who can read it to sort of follow your theory and agree, disagree, add to it, what sort of a citizen is the book written for?
Well, I think it's written for anyone who is interested in people and what makes them tick and how they change. I think the kind of reader who likes Malcolm Gladwell's books, for example, who, by the way, gave me a nice blurb, and is just interested in the human behavior and how it changes and some lessons that one might learn about their own lives from learning about the research that's been done.
So I'm doing my homework for the show, and one of the things that I came about, I don't remember if I came about it on your specific comment or reading this about your book, was something called the page 99 test. Can you tell me about that? Because I would assume that there are certainly a group of people who are interested in the book based on the title, based on the topic, but there certainly must be a group of people who aren't specifically interested in nonfiction or psychology, et cetera. But this seemed to be some sort of description on how to determine whether or not you're interested in the book, regardless of its topic or genre.
Yeah, the book's gotten some nice publicity, and I have to say this was one of the more interesting ones. It's a website that a fellow runs where he just asked authors to turn to page 99 in their book and tell readers what's there. They quote from it a little bit, and I'm not too sure how he came up with the number 99, but I guess it's just kind of a random selection of, like you're in a bookstore and you just flip open a book and read a page or two, and if it interests you, you keep going. If you don't, you put it back and move on to the next one.
So what's on your page 99?
Well, I'm glad I brought a copy of the book with me because I'm not sure I would have known the answer to that off the top of my head. But it is in my chapter on child rearing, and it talks about how parents might be or ought to be concerned with shaping their kids' narratives and helping kids develop an autonomous sense of their role in the world. And this particular page talks about some research in which simply labeling kids' behavior can be helpful. So telling a child that in a classroom, for example, that they are helpful children because they help pick up some litter. The kids internalize labels that adults give them. And so it sounds simple, but often there's lots of different ways we can interpret or label our behavior, and one role of parents and teachers is to provide those labels for kids.
All right, so I'm going to do this throughout the hour, hopefully fewer as we go along, but one of the things I find with professors is that the word choice sometimes doesn't immediately bring a picture or an understanding to me. So when you talk about a narrative, explain that a little more for the non-grad students.
Sure. Well, this is actually the central theme of the book, is that to understand why people do what they do, we have to get inside their heads and see the world through their eyes and try to get a sense for the story that they're telling themselves about the world, that the narrative they've developed to understand themselves and why people do what they do, that it's not so much the objective world, as many philosophers have noted, it's how we interpret that world, the kinds of stories that we tell that really dictate how happy we are and what we do. That is not a particularly novel observation. I think what is more novel, and that social psychologists, my discipline, have contributed to, is how to change those narratives, how to change someone's story if, say, it's too pessimistic or leading them down an unhappy path. One approach, of course, is psychotherapy, that people whose narratives or stories have really gone awry and need some intensive help. I'm a big fan of psychotherapy for people who need it. I think it can be quite helpful. But the research I talk about is, in a way, it's trying to catch people at an earlier point before they have full-blown symptoms or are in need of psychotherapy. You know, maybe they're at kind of a turning point or fork in the road where something's happened to them and they're not quite sure what to make of it. Say it's a college student who's gets a bad grade in their first year and they're not quite sure whether this means that they're a hopeless failure who can never make it in college, or it's just a sign that they need to try harder and work better. And the kinds of techniques that social psychologists have developed helps people, it redirects them onto the more positive or optimistic kind of storytelling and away from the negative kind. And it turns out that if you catch people at the right time, this can be done relatively simply in ways that lead to pretty dramatic self-sustaining change down the road.
We are talking with Professor Tim Wilson from the University of Virginia about his new book, Redirect, Behavioral Changes, ways to talk to yourself, ways to convince yourself to take the positive aspect rather than the negative aspect. Is that a fair, simplistic way to put that?
Yeah, sure. That how to redirect people's stories in ways that help them act in better ways.
All right. So let's. There are a multiple of chapters in here with different topics. You've got academics. You've got parenting. You have teenage pregnancy, prejudice, etc. So let's go through a couple of these throughout the hour. It is 11:14 on the Wake Up Call with Professor Wilson. A little bit later, we'll be taking phone calls. If you'd like, write down the number 979-0919. That's 979-0919. If you need the toll free number, please feel free to use it. That's 877 WNRN Rocks. Professor, you already mentioned the academic student, someone who may have not performed well in the beginning and need to redirect their thought process to a positive manner of what they can do rather than what's happened to them and continue on a downward spiral.
Yeah, let me just elaborate on that a little bit, because it's based on some research I did a number of years ago with college students. Through a survey, we identified a group of first-year students who were not doing particularly well and were concerned about it. And we thought maybe they were at this kind of narrative fork in the road where they could put a very negative spin on this and spiral downwards, or take a more optimistic approach and put their nose to the grindstone. So we brought them in for a study, and we never told them that the point of this was to try to help them. They thought they were just participating in a survey. And it was really quite simple. We gave them some statistics that showed them that many students stumble at first and academically, but get better as they become juniors and seniors. And we showed them, to reinforce that message, we showed them some videotaped interviews of upper-class students who said, yeah, you know, when I was a first year, I didn't do well in that calculus course, but I learned the ropes and now I'm doing much better. So that was about a 30-minute intervention that just tried to redirect the way these kids were interpreting their academic difficulties. We also had a control group that was randomly assigned that didn't get this message, and then we followed these students for the next year or so. We had some short-term measures where we gave them some sample items from the graduate record exam, and indeed the students who got our little intervention did better on these test items, which we took as a sign that maybe we had lowered the heat a little bit for these kids. They weren't quite as anxious about their ability and were able to concentrate better on this test. But then we followed them over the long run, and to be honest, we weren't really too sure whether we'd find any long-term effects of this, because after all, it was just a 30-minute intervention. But it turns out that we did see such a change, that the kids who got our intervention got better grades over the next year, and they were even more likely to stay in college, that the students in the control group, quite a few of them dropped out over the next year, significantly more so than the kids in our intervention group. Well, how could a 30-minute intervention have such long-term effects? I think the way it works is these are self-sustaining interventions, that the students who got our little message, maybe it made them try a little harder for the next test in their classes, and if they showed some success with that, that gave them more confidence, and they tried harder on the test after that. And each little incremental change reinforced this interpretation that they can make it in college, and that led to a cascading beneficial effect, where the other students, at least some of them, I think were in a cascading downward spiral where each failure led to the conclusion that they couldn't make it in college, and as a result, they gave up more easily.
And again, this is I'm learning as I go along and just bringing up questions and thoughts that pop up as we're talking. But isn't this a matter of identifying who has a positive and a negative self-confidence?
Well, sure. But what's interesting about this approach is we don't really know why the individuals in our study were doing poorly. We never assessed them for their initial level of confidence. We did select them for people we thought were at risk for this kind of thinking. But One problem with this area of research is I think these kinds of stories are not entirely conscious. They're not the easiest thing in the world to identify in people. They're the kind of implicit assumptions we make about ourselves and the world. And we took the approach of let's just try to change it. Let's just try this little intervention rather than identifying people one by one as to where they stood. Let's just throw this intervention at a group of them and see what happens. And we had some luck with it.
11:19 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about some behavioral changes, a theory and a book, Redirect, Surprising New Science of Psychological Change, written by UVA Professor Tim Wilson. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, isolated afternoon thundershowers. Highs in the upper 70s, and mostly cloudy with some isolated showers tonight. Lows in the 50s, and partly sunny with a slight chance of showers again tomorrow. Highs in the low 80s. Right now, it's a beautiful day outside. 66 in the valley, 66 in Lynchburg, 72 in Richmond, 69 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And I also need to thank Dixon Disposal for their support of the program today. When Dixon picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or a call 434-978-2111. All right, back with our guest, Professor Wilson. Professor, I read this somewhere, I believe something you did, a paper entitled Telling More Than We Can Know, which reported experiments showing that people are often unaware of the true causes of their own actions. and that when they are asked to explain those actions, they simply make stuff up. People don't realize they are making stuff up, of course. They truly believe the stories they are telling about why they did what they did.
Well, that's one of the first papers I published in my career, and it was trying to counter some of the prevailing wisdom that we are expert introspectors, and I mean, of course, we know a great deal about ourselves, and I don't mean to carry this too far to say that we are truly strangers, but I do think we perhaps sometimes do overestimate how well we can turn that light of introspection inward and discover our true feelings and reasons. I'll give one example. Politicians or political scientists are fond of exit polls after elections where they ask voters, well, who did you vote for and why did you vote the way you did? Well, it's that why question that I'm a little suspicious of. Again, I don't think people are clueless, but it's not something that we are completely aware of as the reasons for our preferences and attitudes. And I think the same is true of the kinds of stories we're talking about today. Again, these are quick, implicit interpretations we make of the world, and we don't always know exactly what those interpretations are.
It seems like sort of the bare bones to the Redirect book.
Yes, I think so. One message of the book is we really have to study these kinds of problems and solutions with the experimental method, that surveys where you just ask people why they're doing what they're doing and why they might change or not are useful, but in the end we have to try change techniques and test them with good experiments to really know what's going to work.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the various chapters/topics that Redirect covers. Talk about parenting.
Well, if we pursue this story metaphor that the way we live our lives is by the kinds of stories we tell ourselves, then it's logical to say that the main job of parents is to foster good stories in their children and to try to instill in them ways of viewing the world that will serve them well for the rest of their lives. And that is sometimes easier said than done. Yeah, one example I give in the book is how we use rewards and punishments as parents. We all do it, and we all have to do it to try to shape our kids' behaviors, to keep them safe and to get them responding in the right way. So we dole out rewards and affection when our kids do the right thing, and when they don't, we often punish them in some way, giving them time out or what have you. And the problem is that if we are too heavy-handed in those rewards or punishments, that the lesson our kids can learn is that I'm doing this to avoid the wrath of mom and dad or to gain their affection, rather than internalizing these things as part of their own values. And so the trick is to try to use these lightly in ways that get our kids to do what we want them to do, but not so strongly that the kids know that's why they're doing what they're doing. Let me give one concrete example of it. You know, I have two kids that I raised here in Charlottesville, and when they were in the Charlottesville schools, they were part of what's called the Book It program, where for every certain number of books they read in elementary school, they got a certificate for a free pizza at a local restaurant. This is a national program that's used in many schools. And it's well-intentioned, and I'm sure that it probably does get some kids who have no interest in reading to pick up a book and maybe spark their interest. But the danger is that for kids who already like to read, they now are given the explanation that the reason you're doing it is to win pizzas, and that reward can replace their story in a sense and make them think they're doing it just for the pizza and actually undermine their interest in what we're trying to increase. So one has to be very careful about how rewards and punishments are used.
Well, what are some, if we assume that the, follow the theory that getting a pizza for reading sort of diminishes the personal quality and gives it more of a physical quality. what are some of the good ways in which to do this?
Well, I think we have to use rewards and punishments much more lightly, we're nudging our children with rewards to do things they ought to be doing, but just not using them in a very heavy-handed way. So if a child has absolutely no interest in reading, then maybe a little bit of reward to get them started can help. But once they show a spark of interest, pull back and maybe don't give the pizzas or whatever the rewards might be to avoid this danger of undermining the interest.
There are certainly different children, different parents and personalities that go with each. Are there different rewards and punishments that go with each situation, or are there some standards that sort of work for everyone under this theory?
Well, definitely. Every child is different, and I think one of the tricky things about parenting is kind of scoping out what works with your child and not with other children or even a sibling. I think that was certainly true with my two kids, that the kinds of things that motivated one were different from the other, and you just have to find that that sweet spot of incentives that get them going but aren't too strong. We all do this. I mean, how many times have we heard parents say, if you eat your peas, you can have dessert? And there's nothing really wrong with that, except if your goal is to really get kids to like peas, making them think they're just eating them for the dessert is one has to be a little careful with how we do that.
But if your children don't like peas,
you
need them to have the nutrients and the nutrition goes with that, what are some other positive ways to get this to happen without offering dessert?
Well, you're certainly right, and it's like the reading example. If the child has absolutely no interest in books, then a little bit of rewards may be useful to get them started. And if your children aren't eating any vegetables whatsoever, then it may take the promise of the ice cream cone to get them to eat any of it. But, kids' tastes change, and if you notice that, they actually are seeming to like some vegetables, then dial back those rewards.
All right, we are talking with Professor Tim Wilson from University of Virginia Department of Psychology. His book about behavioral change is called Redirect, Surprising New Science of Psychological Change. I see the phone lines ringing now. You're welcome to call up with your question or comment, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. I saw it rang briefly and then went away. Call back if your question or comment applies to the topic today. Let me take a moment and thank The Backyard for their support, UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu open for lunch and dinner, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. Backyard is open Monday through Saturday, and you're invited to their outdoor patio this summer. You can call ahead for takeout. You can also find The Backyard on Facebook. All right, back with our guest today. Professor, there are a lot of different chapters and topics that go in Redirect, and suggesting how people take, and I forget what the actual phrase is that you use for people thinking, giving themselves a more positive narrative. Is that the proper way?
Sure. And I mentioned one approach is what I call story prompting, where a third party tries to nudge people down the right narrative path. But there are other ways we can do ourselves. For example, there's some writing exercises that have been developed that are quite powerful. Again, they sound simple, but they can have pretty amazing effects. So one is, if there's something troubling us that we haven't been able to get out of our minds or get over, and a few weeks have passed, it's very useful just to take out pen and paper and for maybe 15 minutes, three or four nights in a row, to just write about our deepest feelings and thoughts about this topic. It's often quite painful to do this. It's difficult if it's a troubling event. But forcing ourselves to do it can shift our narrative, our understanding of why this event happened and what it means to us in ways that allows us to put it behind us. And researchers who have looked at this technique have found that it can lead to better health, stronger immune system functioning, all sorts of benefits if people can make themselves do this.
Well, we'll talk about one of the other topics. I mean, we talked about the academic, we talked about the parenting, but you've got a variety of, maybe better parents, teenage pregnancy.
Sure. There are a few chapters in the book about adolescent behavior problems, alcohol and drug use, teenage pregnancy, violence. And there's lots of programs that have been developed, of course, to try to put kids on the right path. And, you know, if I have a beef about them, there are some that I'm sure are quite effective, but I do worry that some of them haven't been tested properly, where people really are randomly assigned to take part in these programs or to control groups where they're not. But that aside, there are some that have been, and it turns out that one of the effective ways to lower teen pregnancy rates is, oddly, to get kids to do community service. This is some work that a colleague of mine at the University of Virginia, Joseph Allen, has written about, and it's a very well-tested program that is done in high schools in which, as part of a health class usually, kids are encouraged to do volunteer work in a local community agency, such as maybe an old folks home or a daycare center. And that doing so, it turns out, really reduces the rate of teenage pregnancy and also improves academic performance. Well, you know, why would just volunteering have such an effect? I think the reason is that it changes kids' narratives from a sense of disengagement and alienation to one where they actually care more about their community and they feel like they have a stake in what's going on, and that kind of engagement in their community changes their self-views enough that they behave in better ways. I suppose if one was to be crass, you might say, well, if kids are off doing volunteer work, they have less time to be home having sex, and maybe that's part of it, too.
Sounds good. How does the theory sort of work? Depression, people who have negative thoughts, versus just people who make bad choices and have improper behavior?
Well, if people are genuinely depressed, again, I am a fan and advocate of psychotherapy. I think that there are well-tested kinds of psychotherapy that really do work with depression and other kinds of disorders. The kinds of techniques that I'm discussing are really for people who, at an earlier point is one way of thinking about it, before people have full-blown symptoms of a disorder. If someone is a little too pessimistic, they're not depressed, say, but they're too negative in their thinking, I think some of these techniques might be of some help. Again, getting them to do community service, act in more positive ways, can perhaps set them on a better path.
Again, our guest today talking about behavioral changes in his book, Redirect, is Professor Tim Wilson from the UVA Department of Psychology. Call in if you'd like, 1134 here on the Wake Up Call. Ring us at 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. Professor, a quote from my 16-year-old nephew, who quotes a lot in music lyrics. It's not about forcing happiness. It's about not letting sadness win.
Interesting. Well, I like that. I think it is. It's a way of trying to grab a hold of our our narrative in a way. And there is a little research showing that the more we try to be happy, the harder it is. There are these ironic effects where if we're constantly monitoring, you know, am I happy right now? That is counterproductive often. Just getting into a flow of life, enjoying what we're doing, is really a better strategy.
Oh, well, let's go back and talk about a couple of the other specific topics/chapters in the book. I like this one. Scared Crooked, Reducing Teenage Violence.
Well, this is a great example of programs that haven't been tested well. Most people have probably heard of Scared Straight programs, where at-risk kids are taken to prisons where the inmates try to basically scare these kids into a straight life. So they yell and scream at them, show them what it's like to be in prison. And the idea is that such a graphic portrayal of what it's like to go down the wrong path will help these kids make better choices. Well, this was popularized in a documentary, it's been like about 25, 30 years ago now, and these programs have spread like wildfire throughout many communities in the United States and elsewhere. Well, then social scientists got around to actually testing these programs to see if they work, and they got a group of kids and randomly assigned some to take part in them and some not to. And guess what? Not only do they not work, they actually backfire. The kids who take part in them are more likely to commit crimes in the next couple of years than kids who do. Now, no one's exactly sure why there is this boomerang effect. I have some hunches of what it does to these kids' stories about the world to see that they've been chosen for one of these programs, and in a way it sends the message, you know, you must be really at risk if we're going to such lengths to try to scare you out of it. It also turns out that it's dangerous to bring at-risk kids together because often their goal is to impress their peers more than listen to what adults are saying. But it's just a very sad example of, and unfortunately not an uncommon one, of programs that meet the common sense criteria, and it seems like it ought to work. But in fact, once you test it, it turns out that it doesn't. And what does work? Well, there are actually some pretty good mentoring programs. Big Brothers Big Sisters, for example, is a great program that has been well-tested, that giving kids well-trained mentors and establishing those kinds of relationships really does help. And again, back to the volunteering approach, that there is a little bit of evidence that getting kids to do community service and making them feel less alienated also reduces violence.
Again, Professor Tim Wilson here talking about his book Redirect and Behavioral Changes. And it seems like the book, at least in its description, is written for personal changes. But the more we talk about it, the more I hear social changes. They're not about me reading the book because I want to make sure that my initial poor grade in a class doesn't force me into a downward spiral for that whole class and possibly my entire year or academic career. But when we start talking about Scared Straight and Big Brothers, Big Sisters and some of the other conversation we've had, makes me think that this is not personal psychology but sociology and social psychology.
Well, it's really both, Rick. I mean, I'll sound like a pandering author, but there's a little something for everybody here. And there are chapters on personal happiness and things people can do for themselves. As we mentioned, there's a chapter on parenting. But you're right, there's also chapters on diversity training programs, how to reduce stereotyping and prejudice in organizations, and how to policymakers might or schools might reduce bullying and violence. So I say it's both.
All right, and we'll get into some of those specifics in just a moment with our guest, Professor Tim Wilson. It is 11:40 on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And getting to New York City from Charlottesville by air has just gotten more difficult, now only having one flight per day. But a local luxury bus service is stepping in with some major changes to offer more options. After spending 6 months in jail for marijuana possession, Jordan McNeish emerged an activist on a mission to change laws. His message resonated with Charlottesville City Council, but he knows change will take time. And the Hughley trial is back in the news as the convicted felon's attorneys claim he did not receive a fair trial. That's The Hook, bringing the whole family every Thursday. And today's programming on WNRN also brought to you by Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, now celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. You can come into Blue Ridge now to check out a selection of kayaks and canoes and stand-up paddle boards. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is located at Barracks Road in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond. Online for more store information, it's brms.com. All right, so back with our guests, Professor Tim Wilson, his book, Redirect, the single most important psychology book ever written, described by someone who read it, I suppose. I didn't get my chance because it's checked out at Jefferson Madison Regional Library. It's sold out at our local Barnes & Noble. So obviously there are a large number of people who are reading it and appreciating it. How does that make you feel as an author?
Well, obviously pretty good. One toils for a long time on these books in the solitary setting of our offices or wherever, and it's sort of magical that suddenly it's actually out there and people reading it, and it's very gratifying. I get kind of every now and then emails from readers that have various comments, not always positive, with a little beef here and there, but I love getting those. It's just fun to see what people are saying about it.
You talk about people with their positive and negative comments. Do you have different political groups or political topics that sort of bring this out? Because when you talk about teen pregnancy or et cetera, you're certainly at least on the fringe of this type of input from political groups.
Well, there's nothing particularly in the book about politics, and I would hope that the message is something that would appeal to people of any political persuasion, which is that it's to everybody's interest to use programs that work and that we know that work. That if we're going to spend millions of dollars on a particular program, then we darn well ought to know that those tax dollars are well spent. And I think that message would resonate with conservatives or liberals, or independents or what have you, let's find stuff that works and not pour money into programs that don't.
All right. So let's go back to some of the other specific topics, in the book Redirect. Reducing prejudice. It's about me, not my group.
Well, this is a topic that's near and dear to the heart of social psychologists, my discipline, that we've spent decades thinking about why people seem to be so favorable towards their in-group and have show violence and negative attitudes towards people who they think are not like them. And there's lots of research on how to break down those barriers. And it turns out that, maybe not surprisingly, that the best approach is increasing contact between groups, at least under the right conditions, that we can preach all we want, but to actually get folks to talk with each other and interact with each other on an equal basis, where there's equal status and often common goals is really the best approach. But something I've looked at research-wise is people's reluctance to do this. You know, we all get stuck in our comfort zones where we want to hang out with our friends who are usually people like us. And to get us a little out of our comfort zone and to reach out to somebody who's a member of another group that maybe we're a little wary of is tricky, in part because we often just assume that it's not going to go well, that, oh, that person wouldn't really be receptive to being a friend with me, someone like me, and vice versa. And so we've done a little research where we just show, again, these little nudges, just getting people to try things, to change their attitudes a little bit, or just to be a little more open-minded about, you know, maybe my initial interpretation isn't right, and maybe if I just try to talk to the person I wouldn't normally talk to at a party, or reach out to somebody, can actually pay off. And just that initial overture, it turns out, can reap pretty big benefits, that people are often surprised to find that, hey, you know, that person responded pretty positively. And we've done this with college students, where I think people often are a little reluctant to seek out friends who are different from them, and just getting them to see it as a possibility, even, is, turns out, works pretty well.
Wouldn't that, I mean, I guess just my guess would be that college students would actually be more willing to try out and meet new people than a high school student. And so I think part of your description in this chapter is someone going to the lunch table where there's a different, myself, white guy, going to the lunch table with African Americans. And I think you used the word nudging myself to try that rather than immediately feeling uncomfortable and assuming they don't want me there.
Yeah, that's a nice description of the approach. And, you know, whether this is easier in college and high school, I don't know. My kids went to the Charlottesville schools, and one thing I've always liked about them is that starting at a fairly early age, all the kids go to the same school. Currently, that's in fifth grade. I think some parents are wary of this. Oh, my kid's so young to be going to these big schools. But an advantage of it is they meet people outside their neighborhoods who they may not have had contact with, and sure, there's a natural tendency in us all to want to kind of stick to our own friends, but it does give more opportunities for kids to cross boundaries and forge friendships across lines. So I think it's possible in high school as well as college.
But as you try to get somebody to nudge, let's say it happens and it works well, and you're surprised that, oh, this is cool. Is there a process with which to continue on to the next topic? Is there something to do if it doesn't work and you're actually not accepted, and everyone sort of ignores you at the table or mutters under their breath about, what is that guy doing here?
Sure. Well, there's no guarantees that, you know, this is always going to work. But the study we did, all we did was to bring college students in and show them a videotape of a pair of friends who talked about how they had formed the relationship. And in one condition of our study, one member of this friendship pair was white and the other was black. And they talked about how when they first met, they really didn't think they had much in common. But it turned out the better they got to know each other, the better friends they became. And then we had our students write about times something like that had happened to them, just try to connect it to their personal experience. And just that little message was enough to get those students to try on their own. We tracked these kids for a couple of weeks, and it turned out the ones who got this message actually had, if we looked at their Facebook pages, and they had more friends at UVA who were of different races after a few weeks than students in our control conditions did. So I'm sure that in some individual cases it didn't work and may have even backfired, but we know at least that on average it works pretty well.
But as a psychologist, how do you convince someone to try again? Is there a specific type of personality that will continue making the effort, versus the personality that tries once or maybe twice and then says, this isn't me?
Well, sure, and I think, you know, probably one of those personality differences is optimism and resilience, that which people do differ on, and there's even some evidence there's a genetic basis to how dispositionally optimistic or pessimistic we are. And so, you know, I'm sure the pessimist is more likely to give up after one failed attempt than the optimist, for example. You know, I would hope at least that, maybe a repeat of, the kind of message we're trying to send would, help in such cases. It's not going to help everyone, but, I think on average it, has some benefit.
We are talking with Professor Tim Wilson from UVA's Department of Psychology about his book, Redirect. Let me take a moment and thank Richmond Center Stage. They're presenting Tommy Emmanuel on next Saturday, June 9th at 8 p.m. World-renowned guitarist brings his finger-picking style to the Carpenter Theater. Tommy Emmanuel has played with Eric Clapton, John Denver, and Les Paul. You can pick up tickets at the Carpenter Theater box office. That's 1-800-514-ETIX or at etix.com. And Asima man Drew Thompson just walked in the door. Don't go anywhere because at noon he will be here for Les Temps Perdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative music. And Drew loves to have requests. That's at noon here on WNRN. 1151-979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg with Professor Wilson. Professor, you talk about making these nudges and sort of, I forget what the phrase was, but changing the narrative internally so that you can lead yourself down the positive path rather than the fall. Are these changes in behavior, like, you know, you've always had that it takes 3 weeks to create a new habit. Is this sort of following that? Caller, hang on for a second.
I think the way they're self-sustaining is they can lead to a little change in behavior, which then reinforces that narrative and then leads to more behavior change. So I think of it as kind of a cycle of behavior and narrative change that's constantly happening.
But there, does this come from, do you follow that the issue, the problem, the failure, the success comes from the parents? Is this sort of something that's passed, if not genetically, at least from living in the same house and seeing the behavioral issues of those also in your family?
Well, there's a raging debate in the field of developmental psychology as to how much parents matter. And, you know, at one extreme are those who argue that parents don't make much difference at all, that it's all our genes and kids' peers. At another extreme, that it's all about the attachment relationships we form with our parents in the first couple of years of life. And you know, I guess I'm more on the latter. I think parents certainly do matter, but the way they matter, I think, is in this shaping of stories and narratives in their kids.
Well, let's take another topic or two from the book, the chapters. Everybody's doing it, or are they? Reducing alcohol and drug abuse, correct? Is that one of the...
Yep, a chapter on drugs and alcohol and, you know, an obvious problem in our society and certainly at most universities and colleges. It's an issue of people who imbibe too much and all sorts of things. And, you know, one thing that's been tried on college campuses with some success are social norms campaigns where you just correct students' perceptions about how much other people are drinking. It turns out a very reliable finding is that people overestimate that. The kids they notice are the ones who are drunk in the halls at 2 a.m., and they don't notice the ones who are asleep in their rooms or in the library studying. And as a result, they think drinking is much more prevalent at their universities than it really is. And just correcting that misperception, it turns out, does have an effect of people feeling less pressure to drink themselves. So, you know, this isn't a magical approach to curing alcoholism in extreme cases, but it has been shown to take the pressure off kids and make them drink a little less.
I find this so fascinating that this, that your book, Redirect, sort of shows how these internal personal nudges can apply to so many different topics when you... And again, we go back to the beginning where I discovered that the book Redirect was filed under the self-help part of the library system, which didn't necessarily agree with that being exact and perfect. But how you are, how this is sort of a self-help part, but usually that applies to one topic about self-help on how to lose weight or how to stop smoking or how to get in touch better with your children. And here, this is a theory that can be used to apply to at least almost any challenge in life.
I told you there was something for everybody, Rick. No, I think that's true.
All right, 11:56 on the wake-up call. Just a few minutes left with Professor Wilson. I was sharing this information with a friend earlier in the week, and her comment was, it doesn't seem like a new theory. It's think and act positively.
Well, fair enough, and I think parts of it aren't new, namely that it's good to be optimistic and that our lives are shaped by our narratives. The part that's new, I think, and interesting is how to change this, is as to how to get people to think in these ways, and that these little nudges, these so-called story editing techniques that have been used to make people happier, help students academically, close the achievement gap in schools is one we haven't gotten to, but this research has been applied there as well, that there's some pretty exciting research going on in these areas.
Well, we have a few minutes left, so let's talk about the achievement gap.
Well, there's a lot of research showing that one issue is what's called stereotype threat, which is the idea that a minority student who's taking a test not only has to worry about their own performance, how well he or she is going to do, but they have to worry about confirming a negative stereotype of their group. So they're kind of a double jeopardy, and the research shows that this added pressure can actually impair their academic performance. So the question then becomes, how do we turn down that heat? How do we get kids to worry less about confirming stereotypes? And there are some interventions that have been developed for middle schools where they're little writing exercises, getting kids to worry less about whether they belong and to focus less on issues of race can actually improve minority performance considerably. So one study found that a writing exercise that kids did in their English class two or three times closed the achievement gap by 40%. So it's pretty impressive stuff.
You talk about, and again, we are talking about the book Redirect with Professor Wilson, and the majority of this conversation has been about personal thoughts and how to sort of help yourself take on the personal narrative, changing your internal thought process. Is this something that a mentor or someone else can do to, other than handing me the book, is this something that someone else who's read the book, who believes in the theory, can help a student or a sibling or et cetera?
I think so, and I think that is, in fact, why programs like Big Brothers Big Sisters can be so successful, is a good mentor is naturally doing this, shaping the way in which people view themselves, helping them bounce back from failures and becoming more optimistic, say.
All right. Professor, thank you so much for coming on the air today.
Great to be here, Rick. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I appreciate that. I find the topic fascinating as such little, I think you continue to refer to it as nudges, how such little nudges can play such a key part in changing major aspects of your life. Again, Professor Tim Wilson from the UVA Department of Psychology, his book, Redirect, Surprising New Science of Psychological Change. You can get it at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. I found there are a number of holds on it already, so get in line. Order it online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can certainly ask Barnes & Noble to bring it in. They were sold out, and that's a show, a sign of what it's all about. Next week, our guests, Rossi Simpre and Steve Bullock, will be doing sort of a WNRN's version of Car Talk. So get your information down on problems and questions about your car. Thanks again, Professor. Bye-bye, everybody.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.